following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us. 458-8255, 458-TALK. And what is on your mind about firearms today? It's another great day in Fairbanks. The sun isn't out, but it's 3 degrees above here downtown this morning. And at the station here in the studio, Melissa is again expertly running the board. Thank you, Melissa. And she keeps the archives up to date. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible in the archives within a day. So what's on our agenda for today? Kill your darlings. For today's holiday, it's a stretch, but it works. And then we should remember the Battle of Bataan today. And finally, we'll get back to statistics with Guy Smith's Guns and Control book. Now, Glenn Miller will be back with us in 2 weeks on January 21st to talk about reloading and answer any questions you may have. And after that, Glenn is off to the Lower 48 Match Circuit and won't be back until March. So take advantage of Glenn's knowledge on January 21st, Shooter's Corner. Well, what's of interest today, January 7th? Stephen King married his wife Tabitha on January 7 in 1971. And that gives me a January 7 connection to be able to talk about something he said. Now, I've not spent time reading Stephen King books. I watched a few movies made from his books. I just don't have much interest in horror, fantasy, thrillers. I keep busy enough reading about the real thing, the horror caused by the fantasies of history's failed leaders. But there is one book I did read that Stephen King wrote, and that book is titled On Writing, A Memoir of the Craft. And Stephen King shares his tips for writers on how to craft their ideas successfully. There is one quote that stood out to me, and I will probably never forget it. I try to use this wisdom when I write and when I create material for all of you on Shooter's Corner. And the quote from Stephen King is, kill your darlings, even when it breaks your egocentric little scribbler's heart, kill your darlings, unquote. In other words, whether speaking or writing, get rid of anything unnecessary to the story. Stay on target with the concept you're trying to get across to the audience. And what does this have to do with firearms? Well, I struggle with this a lot when I teach. I struggle with all those little darlings that pop up into my head. I spend 12 to 14 hours with students each time I teach an Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class. There's so much to share, and my co-instructors have deep knowledge in their areas of expertise and much to share, too. But I have learned not to let anything extra creep into my conversation, my presentation. I learn not to add even one more sentence or bring up one extra topic, but to stay right on target. And that target is gun safety. It's always gun safety. Whatever I'm talking about at a point in time in that class has to do with gun safety. Whether it's gun handling and operation, ammunition topics, the statutes, practicing the fundamentals, or dry practicing for imaginary scenarios, it all centers around gun safety. And the summary sentence in describing any concept I talk to students about has to relate back to firearms safety. Now, my point in sharing Stephen King's quote, kill your darlings, even when it breaks your egocentric little scribbler's heart, kill your darlings, is whatever you talk to someone about firearms features, functions, whenever you share your opinions about firearms politics or you show someone your firearms, try not to wander down the verbal lane of bravado or show and tell with that firearm unless you've made sure that woven into that conversation is a golden thread of firearm safety. Some of you already know that Stephen King is in favor of a certain level of gun restriction, and he's certainly no friend of the NRA. But sometimes it's the very people who oppose me that I can learn something from. And that something helps spur me forward to make a more effective argument to others. In this case, not straying off target about gun safety. So let's move on to a serious historical event on January 7. I think most of us know about the Bataan Death March, which began after the surrender of Bataan on April 9, 1942. In April, I plan to devote most of a program to this. I'll be taking excerpts from Hampton Side's book, Ghost Soldiers, the epic account of World War II's greatest rescue mission. Hampton Sides is a historian, but he writes history in the form of a novel. And by writing in novel form, we feel like we were there and that we get to know the characters, the men of history, and their personalities firsthand. And Ghost Soldiers tells the story of the Great Raid. The driver behind the Great Raid centers on how our men who surrendered and were captured at Bataan and Corregidor, who were in prison in Puerto Princesa prison camp at Palawan in the Philippines, were forced into trenches drenched with aviation fuel and burned alive by the Japanese as the Japanese prepared to vacate camp. And the Japanese did not want to leave prisoners alive to tell the world how they were treated so cruelly in the camps. So when the Japanese could not transport the prisoners to other locations, they killed them. In the Palawan incident, 11 of our troops escaped those fiery trenches and tunnels. Wounded, some burned, they swam through the shark-infested waters of the Puerto Princesa Bay. And on the other side, exhausted and almost dead, with one surviving a vicious shark attack, they were rescued by friendly Filipinos who put the escapees in touch with our troops. And it was from those escapees that our command learned about the atrocity at Palawan, and then understood that the Japanese would kill their prisoners rather than abandon them. And the Japanese had a kill-all policy so that no witnesses were left to attest to the Japanese POW crimes. Now, this became the overriding reason why much later, on January 30th, 1945, our military made a great effort to liberate our troops imprisoned at a camp in Cabanatuan on the island of Luzon in the Philippines. And that was the Great Raid, and it was successful. So back to today in history, back to January 7, 1942, that was the beginning of the Battle of Bataan. And this was the first major land battle for the Americans during World War II in the Pacific. It was also one of the most devastating military defeats in American history. Approximately 12,000 Americans and 63,000 Filipinos, a total of about 75,000 to 76,000, became Japanese prisoners of war. And this was the largest number of troops under American command to ever surrender. By March 1942, the Japanese controlled all territory within the Western Pacific except the Philippines. General Douglas MacArthur intended to hold his ground on the Bataan Peninsula and Corregidor Island in the Philippines. He was waiting until the U.S. Navy could deliver reinforcements and supplies from the United States. Unfortunately, our Navy ships that were capable of delivering troops and supplies were partially destroyed by the attacks on Pearl Harbor. So those reinforcements and supplies could not be delivered. In the meantime, the Japanese Navy blockaded both Bataan and Corregidor, and that prevented any food, ammunition, or medicine from reaching our troops. Our troops struggled to survive in that tropical jungle of Bataan on half rations. Our troops were half-starved and suffering from tropical diseases and infections. But they continued to bravely fight against the Japanese along the Bataan defense line and a very rugged coastline area. Unfortunately, they did not have the supplies they needed, and eventually they could not hold out any longer. And let's go to a commercial break, and I'll tell the rest of this story.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe.
He got his name from
getting out to play in Alaska is a year-round activity. So before you leave home, make sure your trailer is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to wiring and lights. Have it serviced at Arctic RV. Motorhomes, toy haulers, campers, bodywork to appliances. See their huge selection of RV parts as well. Alaska plays rough. Make sure you and your RV are ready for it with Arctic RV. Book your appointment now. Rough it in style. Arctic RV. Open all winter long at 30th and Pegger.
These are dark times in Fairbanks. The sun rises late and it goes to bed early. Most of my driving is done in the dark these days, and I like to have as much light on the road as possible because hitting a moose can be disastrous. Like a lot of Auto Trim Design customers, I rely on moose lights to help me avoid smacking into a swamp monster. We professionally install Vision LED light cannons and LED light bars, also VLED and Pucco LED headlight replacements. Don't live in the dark. Let us light the way. Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
Weather brought to you by the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eyes connect you to your world. Care for them with the Eye Clinic of Fairbanks. Your eye health professionals on Mini Street.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. Now, before the break, I was just talking about how our troops did not have supplies and eventually we could not hold out any longer. So by April 1942, many of our troops had lost as much as 30% of their body weight. They were starving. Without medical supplies, they suffered from malaria, dysentery, and other tropical maladies. And by that time, only half of our troops could be considered combat effective. Now, according to an article titled Surrender at Bataan Led to One of the Worst Atrocities in Modern Warfare, that's at the USO.org website, and I've taken information for this presentation from that site. Combat effective is defined as, quote, a man who could walk 100 yards without staggering and still have enough strength left to fire his weapon, unquote. Again, half of our troops by then could not be considered combat effective. On April 3rd, 1942, the Japanese launched their final assault on Bataan, and our starved and ill soldiers fought the best they could, but we were no match for fresh Japanese troops. So after the Japanese rolled back the Bataan front line, just 6 days later, on April 9, U.S. Field Commander Edward P. King surrendered our troops. And a quote from the article, King surrendered on April 9 rather than see any more of his starving, diseased men slaughtered by the Japanese forces. Some refused to become prisoners, fleeing into the jungle. Of the ones who got away, many would join the guerrilla movement, unquote. So in surrendering, King disobeyed MacArthur and Wainwright's orders, but almost a month later, Wainwright was forced to surrender about 10,000 of his troops on May 6, 1942, when they could no longer hold on to Corregidor. Now, our troops were rounded up into groups of 100, four abreast, and marched north to Camp O'Donnell, 65 miles away. The cruelty on the march is difficult to imagine. They marched in blistering heat. Our men were shot or bayoneted if they fell or tried to quench their thirst, even from a puddle. And any Filipino who tried to provide our troops with water or food were chased off or killed on the spot. To define their control at various points along the march, the Japanese singled out groups of prisoners, tied them to trees or fences, and shot them for no reason at all other than to prove their control. The Japanese killed between 7,000 and 10,000 men during the Bataan Death March, but we'll never know the exact amount because they didn't keep records. When our troops, along with the Philippine prisoners, reached Camp O'Donnell, they were imprisoned, and Camp O'Donnell was originally built as a Philippine army camp to hold 10,000 men. Now the Japanese imprisoned approximately 60,000 of the Bataan Death March survivors. Survivors were starving, emaciated, and diseased. The Japanese had been surprised by the number of prisoners that surrendered at Bataan. They had not planned for 60,000 prisoners. At Camp O'Donnell, our men, along with the Philippines, died at the rate of about 500 per day, not to mention those who were increasingly disabled by disease. Conditions were so bad that by July 1942, not even the Japanese could let the situation continue. They started letting some of the Philippine soldiers go back to their villages and families. And by the time they finished paroling these Philippine POWs in December of 1943, 26,000 of the original 50,000 to 60,000 Philippine POWs had already died. Now, the Japanese moved our United States POWs from Camp O'Donnell to a camp in Cabanatuan. And even the Japanese, with their cruelty at the time, realized that Camp O'Donnell was no longer a viable prison facility. When I pick up this story again this coming April, and that will be the anniversary of the surrender and the beginning of the Bataan Death March, I want to spend time talking in depth about the Bataan Death March, as well as life in the prison camps. And I will tell the story of the Great Raid, which took place January 1945. And the Great Raid is one of the most successful missions in U.S. military history. It was carried out in about 30 minutes of action by U.S. Army Rangers and Philippine guerrillas. 513 prisoners held by the Japanese at Cabanatuan were freed. And the reason for this great raid was that it was clear to our command that from the horrendous burning alive of our troops at Palawan before the Japanese deserted that camp years earlier, that as the Americans gained territory and the Japanese were about to abandon the camp at Cabanatuan, that our 500 or so troops there, along with some foreign troops and Philippine guerrillas who fought alongside of us, would likely all be murdered by the Japanese. And to tell the story of the Great Raid, I'll share excerpts from, as I mentioned before, in case any of you want to read it ahead of time, Ghost Soldiers, the Epic Account of World War II's Greatest Rescue Mission by Hampton Sides. So stay tuned in April. How's that for long-term planning? Okay. Now, all right, 3 weeks ago, December 17, we were talking about gun statistics. And I want to finish that discussion and then spend another program or two on the subject before we move on. I have been taking information from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control, a nonpartisan guide to understanding mass public shootings, gun accidents, crime, public carry, suicides, and defensive use, and more. Now, we left off talking about accident statistics and defining exactly what is a firearms accident. We spent the December 17 program demystifying gun accident statistics and understanding where they came from and how groups can use or misuse them to promote their agenda. That December 17th program is in the archives. Now, I had read to you the list of major causes of different types of accidents, and firearms accidents are at the bottom of the list. The takeaway is, and I quote from the book, firearms accident rates have been falling for several decades. The second point, they account for about 1.3% of firearms deaths, though 20% of the firearms woundings. And the third point, firearms rank near the bottom of the list of causes of accidental deaths, unquote. In terms of fatal accidents, we learned that poisoning kills 118 times more than gun accident fatalities. Motor vehicle traffic kills 78 more times than gun accident fatalities. And as we went down a list of 14 other types of accidents that cause fatalities, as recorded by the Center for Disease Control, we found that firearms fatal accidents was the very last on the list. Now, you don't have to take my word for it or the author's, Guy Smith's, word on any of this. Look for yourself. Dig out the numbers yourself. Use the CDC Wonder website, Google Centers for Disease Control Wonder database. The acronym Wonder, W-O-N-D-E-R, stands for Wide-Ranging Online Data for Epidemiologic Research. Take topics on the chart heading and then take injury and prevention, then fatal accident reporting. And that's enough of a recap, so let's move on to new material. Let's look at what Smith thinks are the three primary causes of accidental death and injury by firearms. First, design and manufacturing issues. If the gun has design flaws that cause it to fire unintentionally, they fit into this category. Second is recklessness. This is when a person or people choose not to follow the safety rules. And the third is stupidity. If someone uses a gun in a situation where an accident is likely to happen, this is not smart. When we teach our firearms classes, we say that firearms accidents happen out of two actions, ignorance and carelessness. I tell students, perhaps before you came to this class, you did not know the safety rules. Then you may have had an accident out of ignorance. But now that you have sat through this class and you have been taught the safety rules and you've handled your guns properly throughout the class, the only way you will have an accident is if you're careless. And I should interject one more thing here, and this is something we used to say to one another about financial investing, but I think it applies to a number of disciplines, including using firearms. And the saying goes, experience is not a license to ignore the rules. Now, let's see what Smith says about those three issues I listed just a minute ago. First is design and manufacturing issues. Guns can inadvertently fire. It's infrequent, and it's most common in older guns. Today's guns rarely inadvertently fire. Design and manufacturing see to that, plus the ever-present lawsuit, should that happen. Guns today are manufactured so that the gun will not fire until the trigger is held all the way back. And this is why, in recent years, firearms fatalities and injuries have dropped. As older guns without more modern safety features move off the market, either out of circulation or into collections, and they're safely stored away, more of the guns in the hands of the public have these safety features built in. And according to Smith, except in theoretical situations, the gun won't discharge unless the trigger is held all the way back, and it won't discharge if dropped. There was a study from 1987 that tested 20 different pistols of the time, quote, dropping them on a solid slab of concrete from a height of 39.4 inches, unquote. And this test was repeated 7 times, and only one gun failed on the 7th try. But here we are in 2021, 34 years after that test. And here's what Smith says, quote, California created a roster of approved handguns that had to pass a similar drop test. At its peak, there were over 1,400 handguns on the list, and many gun makers simply didn't bother submitting older models for testing. All of the 1,400 of these guns passed the drop test. It's worth noting that California's list of safe guns is shrinking because certification lasts for only 5 years, and California later added new requirements which no gun maker can effectively meet, namely micro-stamping of used cartridges. Thus, attrition has brought the list down below 800, unquote. Now, listeners, I just killed a darling per Stephen King's suggestion. I wanted to go off on a micro-stamping tangent, but I will stick with my agenda today and visit California's micro-stamping law next week. Now, besides the drop test, there are other technical aspects that could, though rarely, allow a gun to fire unintentionally. These, a human has to be involved. Manual safety levers are one of these. Grip safeties are another. For semi-autos, some guns have a decocker for when a round is loaded into the chamber. Smith says, from a design manufacturing standpoint, guns have been getting safer. So he asks, quote, how many of the 486 allegedly accidental gun deaths were caused by defective designs or manufacturing? Unquote. Let's see, are we almost ready? Nope. Got a minute. Okay, I'll keep going. So that we remember that 486 number, where it came from, to recap from September 17, I said that in 2000, 2017, there were 486 accidental firearms deaths compared to the number of firearms non-fatal injuries. And the number of non-fatal firearms-related injuries was 21,219. But compare that 21,219 number for non-fatal firearms-related injuries to the 2,500,353 non-fatal vehicle accident statistics. Okay, and now we're going to a break, and I'll see you around the corner.
Fairbanks.
Don't miss Problem Corner.
Weekdays from 11 till noon on KFAR Radio.
News, I'm Rich Dennison. The FBI is asking for the public's help in finding those involved with yesterday's violence at the U.S. Capitol building.
They're accepting tips, photos, and videos. Four people died, including 35-year-old Ashley Babbitt, a U.S. Air Force veteran who, prior to her trip to Washington, tweeted, "Nothing will stop us. They can try and try and try. But the storm is here, and it's descending upon D.C.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. Coronavirus cases continue to rise across the country as the U.S. records a new one-day record of more than 3,600 COVID-19 deaths.
Hospitalizations have topped 132,000. Arizona being called the hot spot of the world with the worst COVID diagnosis rate in the country. One out of every 119 people in that state testing positive in the past week.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers, U.S. coronavirus deaths have surpassed 361,000. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The U.S. government has held its first ever oil and gas lease sale for Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, an event critics labeled as a bust, with major oil companies staying on the sidelines and a state corporation the main bidder. The sale was held as scheduled Wednesday after a judge rejected requests by indigenous and conservation groups to halt the event. It garnered bids on half the tracts that were listed as available on the refuge's coastal plain. But the sale was a bad start to the revenues the federal government had hoped to gain from the refuge. It had estimated the lease sales would bring in $1.8 billion over a decade to be split between the Alaska and federal governments. The money raised on Wednesday fell far short. The government sold only 11 tracts of 22 it was offering in the refuge's coastal plain, or about 550,000 acres out of about 1 million offered. Most of the tracts totaled about 50,000 acres and went for a bid just over $1 million. None of Alaska's three top oil producers, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, or Hilcorp, the owner of the large Prudhoe Bay oil field west of the refuge, submitted any bids. That's it from the news desk. Have an amazing Thursday.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Extend the life of your car or truck. Keep it in top shape with Rogers Auto Repair. Rogers is a complete auto shop. They do it all. Tune-ups to winterizing. Even engine and transmission rebuilds right on the premises. Depend on the people with experience and a sound reputation. They've been helping folks from the same location near the airport on Dale Road since they opened in 1967. Call family-owned and operated Rogers Auto Repair and be their next satisfied customer. Call 479-6665. Rogers Auto Repair.
Explore winter trails you never thought possible. Stand, float, walk on snow with better traction and stability than walking down the street. Modern snowshoes are the perfection of a thousand-year-old idea. They're lightweight and versatile, easy and fun to use for all ages. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. Get the exercise you crave. Let it snow. Go explore. Start today. No lift ticket required. But first, find the right style and the right fit at Frontier Outfitters. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
These are dark times in Fairbanks. The sun rises late and it goes to bed early. Most of my driving is done in the dark these days, and I like to have as much light on the road as possible because hitting a moose can be disastrous. Like a lot of Auto Trim Design customers, I rely on moose lights to help me avoid smacking into a swamp monster. We professionally install Vision LED light cannons and LED light bars, also VLED and Pucco LED headlight replacements. Don't live in the dark. Let us light the way. Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and tell us what's on your mind about firearms today. And I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I don't know how well statistics come across on the radio. If any of you are having trouble following me, just call in. But let me backtrack so I can complete this thought here. I was recapping from the last time we talked about this, September 17th, and I said that in 2017, there were 486 accidental firearms deaths compared to the number of firearms non-fatal injuries. And the number of non-fatal firearms-related injuries was 21,219. And right before break, I said that if we compare that 21,219 number for non-fatal firearms-related injuries to the 2,500,353 non-fatal vehicle accident statistics, then we start seeing some perspective. So if we compare those firearms accident fatal statistic of that fatal statistic of 486 in 2017 to the number of vehicle fatal accident deaths, which were 38,748, we don't want to lose track or lose sight of perspective, which is the much smaller percentage of fatal or non-fatal firearms accidents as opposed to other types of injuries, especially those from automobiles. Now, though even one accidental firearms death is one too much, we do need to keep that perspective for the much smaller percentage of firearms fatal accidents in comparison to all other categories. Now, getting back to a quote from Smith, how many of the 486 allegedly accidental gun deaths were caused by defective design or manufacturing, unquote. We do want to make sure it is not the gun manufacturers or some oversight that's causing these statistics. Now, Smith says, quote, one true measure is to look at the number of lawsuits filed against gun makers for endangering defective designs. Another would be how often firearms are recalled when the makers discover defects, unquote. So Smith talks about the Consumer Product Safety Commission back in the days of Ralph Nader, 1972. Some of us older people remember Ralph Nader. When Congress tasked the commission to, quote, protect the public against unreasonable risks of injuries and deaths associated with consumer products, unquote. Guns were not put within the commission's scope of oversight. And the reason? Well, there were two. Smith tells us on the practical side of things, no one thinks that guns are not dangerous. Even gun manufacturer companies caution us. Guns do kill. The wild game we're hunting or the bad guy we're defending ourselves against, it's no surprise that guns kill. This puts guns in conflict with the purpose of the Consumer Product Safety Commission's mission. Making guns so they do not kill by intent defeats the purpose. Only making guns safe from unintentional discharge makes sense. Now, on the political side of the issue, the gun control discussion was becoming what Smith calls a hot topic during the 1970s. And some people felt the Consumer Product Safety Commission's members could be hijacked to, as Smith says, quote, put the firearm industry into non-existence, unquote. Now, since presidents appoint the commissioners for that agency, and presidents can be pro-gun or anti-gun, in theory, a president could stack the commission's leadership and, another quote from the book, strangle the gun-making industry through endless regulations, fines, litigations, and all the other weapons of commerce destruction the government routinely wields, unquote. So there was a practical and a political reason why firearms were not included under the purview of the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And I'm not sure how Ralph Nader felt about that. Now, Smith said his Gun Facts Project did check recalls that he could find from an organization that maintains gun recall information on their website. And you can Google this, Gun Product Safety Notices, and it's maintained by the Violence Policy Center. And the Violence Policy Center is a gun control advocacy group. It is not our friend. If you check out that website, Violence Policy Center, look under the heading link for regulating the gun industry and take the link there for gun product safety notices. Now, Smith says that nearly all of the recalls on that page were voluntarily made by gun makers, or the problem was found by the gun maker in testing and then listed. And we can't know the precise amount that were voluntarily made by gun manufacturers as opposed to being submitted by the public, because on some of those, there just isn't enough information given. And the takeaway here, and Smith devotes a number of paragraphs to it, is that the number of accidental shootings due to defective design is small. That's what we need to know. Next, we have to talk about the roles recklessness and stupidity play in gun accidents. Those were Smith's second and third points about the causes of gun accidents. I read the majority of injuries and fatalities can be attributed to recklessness and stupidity. Now, Smith says we can't really separate recklessness from stupidity, and he uses that biker example we talked about a few weeks ago. The intoxicated biker was reckless for trying to shoot the beer can off his friend's head, but his friend was stupid when he said, "Bet you can't do that again." And Smith says, as with cars and power tools, there's myriad ways firearms can be misused in a dangerous way. There is active misuse and there is passive misuse. Now, active misuse is when a person of an age legal to operate a firearm, quote, manipulates a gun in such a way as it fires A, when they do not want it to, or B, in a direction that it should not, unquote. A passive misuse is when, quote, a gun owner leaves it unattended in such a way that the gun is either A, subject to disruptions that causes it to fire, like drop from a high place onto a hard surface, and I'm going to interject my comment into this quote, as with an old single-action gun without a safety, or, back to quoting, B, is acquired by a person unqualified to handle it, a child, for instance, unquote. And I had not thought about categorizing being reckless and stupid with a firearm into active misuse and passive misuse, but it makes sense. Active accidental firearms deaths and injuries, according to Smith, account for most of the statistics. He notes the association between alcoholism and firearms misuse. He cites that the Centers for Disease Control concluded that, and this is his quote, nearly 35% of homicide and suicide victims tested positive for alcohol, unquote. And here's a quote from the book again. In one rather comprehensive study within a single state where all gunshot wounding is reported to the police, accidental shooters, when compared to the general population, were more likely to have previously been arrested, been violent, busted for intoxication, driven recklessly, accumulated traffic tickets, or had lost their driver's licenses, unquote. The takeaway? If a person is reckless doing any or all of the things I mentioned above, they are more likely to have a firearms accident. Now, Smith tells us that in terms of active recklessness, some old data from an insurance company that investigated gun accident claims shows that 14% occurred while cleaning a loaded gun, 5% occurred when the victim was playing Russian roulette, 17% were actually failed suicide attempts, but reported as accidents in order to avoid embarrassment or intervention. 12% occurred when people were scuffling for possession or playing with a gun. and 12% were claimed to be accidental but were actually attempted homicides. And that adds up to 60%, and Smith didn't categorize the remainder. So we can assume the predisposition to or even the personality type of active recklessness can lead to a firearms injury or death if the person who is inclined to be reckless in other areas of their life possess a firearm. Okay, we are going to break while you think about if you know some people like that.
Getting out to play in Alaska is a year-round activity. So before you leave home, make sure your trailer is ready to roll. Wheel bearings to wiring and lights. Have it serviced at Arctic RV. Motorhomes, toy haulers, campers, bodywork to appliances. See their huge selection of RV parts as well. Alaska plays rough. Make sure you and your RV are ready for it with Arctic RV. Book your appointment now. Rough it in style. Arctic RV. Open all winter long at 30th and Pegger.
These are dark times in Fairbanks. The sun rises late and it goes to bed early. Most of my driving is done in the dark these days, and I like to have as much light on the road as possible because hitting a moose can be disastrous. Like a lot of Auto Trim Design customers, I rely on moose lights to help me avoid smacking into a swamp monster. We professionally install Vision LED light cannons and LED light bars, also VLED and Punco LED headlight replacements. Don't live in the dark. Let us light the way. Auto Trim Design, 2550 South Cushman.
KFAR weather.
Few clouds this afternoon. Look for high temperatures today between 5 and 10 above. Tonight, partly cloudy with our lows dropping down to near 5 above. Tomorrow for Friday, we could see some snow in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon with highs between 10 and 15 above. And a quick look at the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, partly cloudy with high temperatures warming up to near 20 above. This has been a look at your latest Fairbanks area weather forecast.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and share with us what's on your mind about firearms today. Now,
what's up,
getting back to our book information from Guy Smith's Guns and Control. Smith says it is passive recklessness that is heartbreaking. He describes the term incompetent actors. These include people who are not able to make informed and rational decisions. Incompetent actors include people who are mentally incompetent to make certain decisions by law. Smith says, quote, guns and ammo left in places where incompetent actors can find them is a small part of the already small number of accidental gun mishaps. Though the incompetent actor user may have purposely pulled the trigger on the gun, they did so not understanding the ramifications. This includes when a deranged and seriously mentally ill teenager stole a relative's guns and shot up his high school. It also includes when a teenager intentionally swipes a parental firearm and launches a bullet into his buddy while horsing around. And it also happens when a toddler finds a gun his gangbanger older brother left tucked between the mattresses of their shared bedroom, unquote. Smith separates out the mentally ill from what he calls foolish teenagers. At some level of mental illness, a person simply does not understand the moral and legal responsibility of a firearm. And yes, we must keep our firearms secured to keep them from unauthorized persons. And since we do not always know who they may be, we need to secure our guns always. Now, Smith says for teenagers, it is known from studies of street gangs that the prime age for recruitment is during the teenage years. He notes this is a phase of, quote, incomplete competency. That was a new term, incomplete competency. And it's because of this that a great degree of accidental gun injuries occurs among teens associated with gangs. And in that, we find yet muddier waters, since many reported accidents are not accidents at all, unquote. That was from Smith's book. Now, Smith says we should look at kids, what he terms, quote, real kids, little ones who have not reached puberty, unquote. Now, again, Smith says the most recent reporting year, which I take to be 2017 or 18 for this book, the Centers for Disease Control, quote, estimate a total of 74 children ages 0 to 14 died from gun accidents, unquote. Of course, that's 74 too many. But as Smith points out, another quote, but statistically, it is a very small subset of the estimated 4,114 accidental child deaths the same year, unquote. Now, sadly, Smith notes even the number 74 is likely overstated. And this is why it's sad, because he says the harsh reality is, quote, unfit parents who murder their children and then in a panic claim a gun accidentally discharged. We know this to be true because about 60% of homicides of children are at the hands of their parents, who then have a vested interest in having an alibi. And thus the number of actual accidental gun deaths falls by some undeterminable set, unquote. Now, Smith points out the studies of unintentional gun injuries for true children in the 0 to 14-year-old age group is statistically weak. And here's another quote. 74 annual accidental child gun deaths equate to less than 2 children per state per year. Drawing statistical validity from such a small sample is mathematically impossible, unquote. Now, Smith tells us that the Centers for Disease Control data by age show people between 25 and 29 have the highest number of non-fatal gun accidents. But he says for children, the CDC, quote, suppresses the data because the numbers are too low to be statistically valid, unquote. So as Shooter's Corner listeners, we have to think about and question the information we read by anti-gun enthusiasts about the number and prevalence of gun accidents for young children 0 to 14 years old, the age group where there's likely no influence statistically by gangs. So what is happening and under what circumstances do these young children become injured in what is termed a firearms accident? And we now know not all of these incidences are true accidents, just reported as such. So Smith tells us a comprehensive set of studies done using about 100 hand-selected hospitals, and he says that's 2%, really less than 2% of the hospitals in the United States, and that in itself is statistically small. But he thinks we can approximate when and how kids are accidentally shot from that data. Quote, this is kind of a long quote. They report that that of non-fatal accidental shootings, 80% were where the child was shot by themselves or by a friend, a relative, or another person known to them. In other words, not by a stranger. This makes intuitive sense, as the child needs to be in the proximity of a gun that's being used recklessly, and that it is more likely to happen in the home than at a corner playground, unquote. Less than 25% of these accidents occur to children under the age of 10. And Smith thinks it's unsurprising, quote, the rate of such misadventures is 3 to 4 times higher for boys than girls, unquote. The takeaway is that though the total of kids involved in gun accidents in this 0 to 10 or 0 to 14-year-old age group is small, it is unclear to me at this point which of those age groups he's talking about. The majority of the incidents in this group comes from kids obtaining guns in their home environment. And Smith says from that point, quote, things get statistically sketchy, unquote. Now, the reason is that there are few academic papers on gun accidents and injuries for children in that 14-year-old cutoff group that the CDC uses. Most academic studies that include children use a bracket up to 19 years of age or 24 years of age. So Smith advises that since we now know quite a bit about teenage involvement with street gangs, the gun accident and death statistics that include young people up to 19 to 24 years do not truly paint a picture of accidental deaths of children. Now, Smith says we need to be aware of unsavory data provided by groups with agendas. First is age. The majority of academic papers put before us by those with agendas about gun control and children use age groups up to either 19 or 24 years old. And Smith says that the statistics for children and young teenagers will be completely different than that of the larger group and those now influenced by gangs and other influences. Second is locality. Smith says academic papers rarely look at the connection between the location and street crime when compiling statistics on youngsters. And it's well known that new gang members are recruited in their teenage years and that, quote, gun accidents for large central metro and medium metro areas track well with gun participation rates, unquote. Third and last is small numbers. Still talking about the young people in our population, Smith says, quote, but the number of accidental gun deaths is so small as to be labeled unreliable by the CDC. Quality statistical analysis is not possible for accidental gun deaths, though it may be possible for gun injuries, unquote. And my conclusion of this chapter on gun accidents that result in either death or injury is that it is truly a tragedy for young people of any size group. And though I do not think we can do much by way of stopping gang-related accident injuries and deaths at certain ages due to gang influence and access to guns, I do think we can prevent true accidents from happening in the home or vehicle or while a family is out camping if guns are locked up or otherwise secured. And we have to recognize that when children are involved, it may not always be a true accident. It may be the parent or the adult intentionally causing harm to the children. And that ends what I have to say so far from Guy Smith's book, Guns and Control. This would be a good time to reinforce the safety rules. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep your finger off the trigger until ready to shoot, and always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. Now, I wanted to tell you a couple of things. If any of you are interested in shooting the NRA Bullseye Leagues at the Fish and Game Range, we're starting up. We're having an organization meeting this Friday, but you can still join up. There'll be a practice shoot the Friday after that, and then the league starts. And what's different this year is normally in the middle of the winter, we have center fire on Wednesday evening, and we have 22 league on Friday. In the fall and the spring, we have two 22 leagues, one on each night. But in the winter, we have the center fire on Wednesday. But the center fire league did not fill up, and it's probably because of the ammunition shortage issue and the difficulty in getting components to reload. A lot of those people who shoot center fire do reload. So what Paul Mackey has done, and Paul Mackey's in charge of our leagues, he's opened up that Wednesday night league to 22 shooters. 22 caliber shooters, not 22 people. So we have two teams of center fire, and there's enough room for two teams of 22 shooters to shoot on Wednesday night. And I know that a lot of people don't want to shoot. They want to shoot bullseye, but they don't want to shoot on Friday night because they want a three-day weekend. They want their Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So now you can shoot on Wednesday night. You can shoot your 22. There are, last time I looked, there are several regular spots open, and I think there's about two spots for alternates open. So go to the aimcom.org website and sign up for that. I am shooting league on Friday night this winter. Now, I have some extra time, so I can talk about one of my little darlings. I purchased a new-to-me pre-owned gun last week. It's a Smith & Wesson Performance Center Model 19 Carry Comp, blued with a 3-inch barrel, and it has just a dreamy trigger. And of course, if I told you about it earlier, I'd be letting one of those darlings creep into my otherwise planned conversations. But I'm going to put that on the agenda for next week. And also, my gun test review magazine came in, and it has a review of the new and the old pythons together against each other, and I'm going to talk about that, and that should be a lot of fun. I will see all of you or talk to all of you next week. Have a great week.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.